Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If only All-In Physical Therapy had been around when I injured my coccyx playing bumper pool. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, a legendary tambourine tech for the Little River Band, my brother Mike. How much that pay, being the old tambourine tech for the Little River Band? I'll take it. I don't know what it is, but I'll be it. They got a huge following, especially in probably Utah, I imagine. Who knows?
Mike, what does being a tambourine tech entail exactly?
Oh, so much. You know, you got to make sure the tambourines are in order and they're, you know, you got to give them the right one for each song. Saturday night, I was dreaming of you. Oh, Little River Band, LRB. I always got some LRB queued up.
I knew you'd take it there. Yes, Mike, fantastic tambourine tech. If you're looking to go out on the road and you're a soft rock band, then give him a shout. He's all over the tambourines. On this week's episode, we'll look back at a fairly strong week, at like an even week, a very even week for the boys in blue. Discuss a fiery start from the Royals minor league pitchers. Something's happening down on the farm with the pitching development. We got to talk about it. And then we'll preview this week's games against the Blue Jays and Tigers. It's a continuation of this homestand to start the week here. But first, we have another review, everybody. It's all happening for us in terms of the reviews. And so we're very excited about
that. Two reviews back to back weeks.
This one might be a bot. I'm just going to throw that out there. This one might be a bot. Here's just like a little review writing tip for those of you out there. If you want us to think that you're not a bot, put an actual name where it says name, okay? Not like a series of numbers, okay? Because this is just a random series of numbers. 198. So reviewer 198256743.
You're reading the numbers?
That whole, you know, that person we all know from high school.
Close personal friend.
Yeah. Who, their title of their review just says great, which, you know, that's great. Thank you. 198256743. We really appreciate that. And they gave us 5 stars and said, truly great Royals podcast. So much insight and useful banter. Thank you.
I love it. We love useful banter.
Whether you are a bot or the first step of AI taking over, whatever, we appreciate that review. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're still going to take it to heart. We're still going to, you know, let it sink in and feel good. So thank you. Royals Weekly is brought to you by Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Phoenix has all of our favorite things: year-round golf, year-round baseball, and Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Whether you want to buy your dream retirement home or just stay a while and catch spring training, Eric can help you find the perfect house fast. We've known him for 30 years and trust him far more than we even trust each other.
I spent a year trying to have Mark declared legally dead so I could cash in on a good sense punch card that he had going.
Yeah. Okay. Mike's real into that good sense. Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd and home sales and purchases for those who want to stay a while longer. Are you a baseball player or parent who needs a place in the Phoenix area? Eric can find you the perfect spot fast. Want to spend your days shanking golf balls into the great beyond? Eric knows the golf scene like Mike knows the inside of a Baconator. Find Eric online at ericoxer.com if you can figure out how to spell his name. It's ericaxier.com. Or just shoot him a text at 480-383-9745. That's 480-383-9745. Even if you're just curious about what he can do for you, he's 100% no pressure, one of the best people we know.
And he never tries to take third with one out in the seventh, down 3 runs, and the heart of the order coming up. Never.
You could tell who I was writing that about. We'll start our review of last week with roster news like we always do. There's a little something to talk about here, which is pretty nice, right? Like, lately we've been completely devoid of roster news. It's been wild. But Michael Massey was reinstated from the injured list last week, which, of course, created a little conundrum for the Royals. They had to send somebody off the 26-man. They chose Nick Lofton, sending him down to AAA. Mike, what are your thoughts on the idea of sending Lofton down, getting Massey back, and all that?
Love getting Massey back. That's awesome. We need to really get, you know, it's a big important year for Michael Massey. He came out, got a couple of hits in that first or second game back. Can't remember which one. Tough spot for Lofton though, because you felt like he was kind of filling the role that Nick Lofton is meant to fill very well early in this year. And then he gets sent back down. And so that sucks for him. You know, there are other guys, possibly, you know, Garrett Hampson, Adam Frazier, who you might think, well, they're not contributing as much. Well, they don't have options. And so, you know, when you're in that situation, you're a younger player, you have options left to give. Generally, you give them for your team at some point, especially if you're a player like Nick Lofton is, who's kind of a utility guy to begin with. So, yeah, tough for him. I'm sure we'll see him back up here at some point, but good to get Massey back. And hopefully Lofton goes down there and keeps doing what he's been doing at the major league level.
Yeah, the Massey thing is something I think we're kind of losing focus on. It's great to have Massey back, right? Like, we need that bat in the lineup right now, especially because the Royals are struggling so much offensively, or at least to be consistent offensively. They'll go out and score 9 in a game, and then they'll get blanked like they did today, right? Like, it's a real up-and-down offense, and they could use one more bat in that lineup that just lengthens it so we don't have a trip through the, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 holes that's like that was like today. Today it was Hampson, Frazier, Renfro, Isbell. Isbell was later, he pinch hit, but we had a trip through the 6 through 9 in our lineup. Was a real desert of a trek through the lineup there, and we need to lengthen it. We need guys in those who are going to provide quality at bats, who have the ability to drive runners in and that sort of thing, and he's going to be that for us. I think Massey has a decent chance to be that. Lofton, I just it's hard for me because you can't say, hey, our division's weak, we're going to make a run at it, and then send a guy like Lofton down, because he gives you the best chance to win games. He is better than whatever rotation they're going to have with Massey and Frazier. He is better than whatever they're going to get from Garrett Hampson. Nick Lofton is just a better baseball player, and he gives them a better chance. I understand that he doesn't play center field like Hampson does, but the question I start to really ask is, what is Frazier doing that Nick Lofton can't do, and then some? You know, I know they paid Frazier, and I know that, you know, they're trying to get as much value out of that contract as they can. But guess what? You have a bad problem, which is that Nick Lofton is now better, right? Like, and so it's a good problem to have. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like every fan can see what's going on right now. It has nothing to do with putting the best team on the field. And you told us you're trying to compete. It's a little bit of a mixed messaging there for me.
My thing is there's other aspects, too. You know, how much better is Garrett Hampson at center field than Dairon Blanco? Is he that much better that you can keep him and send Lofton down? You know, and if he is, okay, maybe how much better is Blanco than what Nick Lofton could give you at the end of a game? You know, so we've got to start, you know, because I know Lofton can give you second base. I know he can do stuff in the first 7 innings that Dairon Blanco can't do. And so what levels are we thinking at here? Are we actually, again, like you said, trying to put the best 26 man together that we can get? Or are we worried, hey, we paid Adam Frazier $4.5 million and Garrett Hampson $2 million. They got to be in the major leagues.
That's what it seems like at this point, but we'll see moving forward. I mean, I think there's a good chance that they start looking for a market for Hunter Renfro and Adam Frazier pretty early in this season. I would, because, you know, you have guys who can probably fill those roles in better ways. Jordan Lyles also went on the restricted list for personal reasons yesterday. And so that's something he did. They brought up Anthony Veneziano to replace him, and he got to pitch in a couple games so far, I think. Mike, what are your thoughts on Lyles to the restricted list and Veneziano up to replace him?
Well, hopefully all is well for Lyles and his family. That's the first thing you think of, is I hope it's nothing tragic. And then the other thing, you know, Veneziano comes up. He looked pretty good in his first outing on Saturday. I think he pitched a little over an inning, maybe 2 innings even, in that game when it looked like the Royals were getting blown out. And then they ended up coming back and making it a really close game. And then I think he gave up a run in today's game, if I'm not mistaken, 2 hits and 1 run. So I like him. I think he looks good. I think he could fit in a bullpen in a couple of different ways. I think Veneziano could, which is always good. And then you could always start him if you need him to, too. And I think he'd be okay there. So happy that Veneziano is going to get a shot. Not so happy that it came at the expense of Lyles possibly having some personal issues in his family.
Yeah, we hope everything is going great for him, or we hope everything is, you know, getting back on track with those issues and nothing too terribly bad happened. But At the same time, it was interesting to me that it happened when it did, because that thing happened for Lyles. He goes on the restricted list, and the very next game, Cole Reagans gets blown up after 1 2/3 innings or whatever it was, right? 1 1/3, 1 2/3. And it's like, oh no, we need a long man now. Like,
we need Jordan Lyles.
Yeah, we need a Jordan Lyles, right, for that game. And he would have definitely pitched in it had he not been on the restricted list. And so it's creating this odd situation because the Royals are in the middle of a long stretch of games without a day off right now. And so they're not going to have a day off until the end of the Detroit series. After they'll play the Blue Jays 4 games, they'll play Detroit another 3, and then they'll get a day off after that, I think. And so that will put them like something like 14.
It's 13 games.
13? Yeah. 13 games in a row without a day off. It's easier for them in some ways because their starters have gone so deep and that sort of thing, but they started to get a little bit tested in that second Baltimore game where Reagans blows up, and so they don't have, you know, somebody to, they have to sort of string a whole bunch of relievers together. Now they've used a bunch of guys multiple days in a row, and so it's going to be a little bit tougher for them to figure out how do we piecemeal this thing together. It wouldn't even surprise me if Lyle stays on that restricted list, if they end up cycling Veneziano down and bring someone like Bolin up to just fill some innings, fill some time, you know, that sort of thing. Or Will Klein, maybe somebody like who's on the 40 man, just filter him up so that they can fill some of those innings. On the field last week, the Royals went 3-3 to bring their overall record to 13-9. That brings them to second in the AL Central. They were able to grab 2 of 3 from the White Sox, which was nice to see, but a lot of people were hoping for a sweep of the White Sox, who are one of the worst teams in baseball, one of the worst teams I've ever seen, honestly. And so we were hoping for another sweep from them.
And we're Royals fans,
and yeah,
people. We've seen bad baseball.
I watched the Royals last year. I watched every game. You know, like I've seen some of the worst of the worst, okay? They're really, really bad. But hoping for a sweep, weren't able to get it because the bats kind of went cold in that last White Sox game. They come back home. Baltimore comes in. We grab a great win on Friday night. I went to that game. That was a blast. It was UMKC night at the K, having tons of fun, home runs, lots of fun. The offense looked like they were coming back. And then Baltimore comes out, destroys Cole Reagans yesterday. They hold on to the lead, or hold on to the win, and they just went out and beat pretty soundly the Royals today. Mike, what are your thoughts on how the week went last week?
I think it's about as we would have expected it. It just didn't happen maybe the way we would have expected it. Put it that way. Baltimore's a great team. So losing 2 of 3 to a great team is not that big of a deal, but you don't expect for Cole Reagans to blow up like that. And you still to have a chance to win the game in the late innings. And they did, you know, Kyle Isbell doesn't get thrown out at third there. We probably tie that game in the eighth, you know, possibly giving, you know, who knows after that. But
I'll also say if Salvador Perez doesn't allow that passed ball earlier in that, like an inning before that, which is just a ball that literally went in and out of his glove.
Oh, no, yeah. I think it broke his glove.
Oh, it broke his glove. Okay.
Did you know that? It broke his glove and went through, yeah.
I can't,
it wasn't
really
his fault.
Can't really call him out for that then. Okay.
Yeah.
Some days all the breaks just go against you, right? Like,
yeah, and so that was a tough one. Even though, I mean, great job rallying back. He hit that great. I mean, he had 2 massive hits in that game.
Yeah.
Salvador Perez did. But, yeah, it ended up about how you thought it would. You ended up with a 3-3 week, winning a series against a bad team and losing a series against a good team. That's kind of, well, I think, what we're figuring out what these Royals are. Kind of like the 2013 Royals were. They're the kind of team that actually beat up on the teams they were supposed to and then scrapped with the good teams but didn't always come out on the winning end. And that's what it kind of feels like this team is right now.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I see a lot of people after the Baltimore series who were expressing like, oh, here's the Royals' record against teams over 500. Here's their record against teams below 500. And of course, they're killing the teams below 500 and not doing great against the teams above 500. And it's like, yeah, because they're like a 500 team. They're like a in the middle team. Like, that's what they're going to do. They're going to beat bad teams. They're going to struggle to beat good teams. And that's sort of what middle of the road teams do, you know, like, and so that doesn't surprise me. There were a couple missed opportunities. I think the thing that gets people is that they're in all of these, especially Baltimore this year. Like the 2 Baltimore series we've had.
They should have won
They should have at least split the season series. We're now done playing Baltimore all year. We should have at least split the season series, right? Maybe even gone 4-2 in the season series because we had bullpen blowups and all these sorts of things that were like, ah, I think that's the thing that gets, it's like, we don't have to have a really bad record against the good teams. If we could have just not made this one mistake or this one bullpen guy who blew it up or, you know, whatever like that, it's just that this close to maybe being that little bit better of a team than we actually are. Some people played like the people who were good enough to be that little bit better, Mike. Who is your strong performer for this week?
Salvador Perez has been, not just for this week, this year, looks like he's 27 again. You know, looks like he's back to being youthful captain, but with the power that he's had in the last 5 years. And so he went 5-for-16 with 2 home runs, 5 walks. In a week for Salvador Perez. You got to love it. And 7 RBI. And like every one of those hits felt like it came in the most important moment of the game. And so, he's just amazing. You know, a Royals legend doesn't even really touch what Salvador Perez has done. He'll get a statue someday. If he continues to play this year like he has so far, now I don't expect the numbers to stay where they are, but if he continues to be very, very good this year, who knows? You know, who knows? He may get in the Hall of Fame on kind of a lifetime achievement thing where it's like, hey, you won a World Series. You were the best catcher in baseball for a long stretch, and you were the best hitting catcher in baseball for a long stretch as well. I think you got to look at him that way. If this continues for 3 to 5 more years, you're talking about, in my eyes, a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, if he can play like this for 3 to 5 more years, there's a decent chance he gets over 300 home runs. And over 300 home runs at the catching position, playing in Kauffman, having the defensive accolades that he has, being a winner like he was, you know, being the heart and soul of one franchise, all of those things will, I think, help his Hall of Fame case. I think, you know, and I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this, but like, there are numbers out there. His defense has been significantly better this year than it has been in the last few years. And that's another thing, like a testament to how hard he's worked to keep his body in shape, to get better at the little deficiencies that he had that started to develop over time, especially the framing and stuff like that. He has gotten so much better at those things. And he is now a very, very good defensive catcher again, as well as being an offensive stalwart right now for this lineup. It's really amazing to see, and a testament to how much he loves baseball and what a great professional he is. I'm talking about a young professional who looked really, really good this week. And that's, I looked, obviously, the offense, there wasn't a lot of hot performers last week to choose from. So I went to the pitching, and there were a few guys there, but I wanted to pull out Matt Sauer as my strong performer this week because I was thoroughly impressed with what I saw from him in the game that I went to. And then they asked him to pitch again this week because they're so sort of hard up for pitching in the bullpen after that Reagans blow up. And I thought he's just held his own very well. You know, he went 3 1/3 innings pitch last week, 0 runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. You don't love the same number of walks and strikeouts, but he's doing enough to get outs and to sort of be what this bullpen needs him to be that you really got to applaud it. Cause you're talking about a guy who went straight from Double A to the majors, really tough to do, and didn't have that much time in Double A. I don't think, like, he didn't pitch that much last year. And so really, really tough transition to make. It seems like he's figuring some things out. I don't think he's all the way there. I don't even think he's as good as he's going to be this year, because I think they're going to continue to work with what his pitch mix needs to be. They're going to give him a pitch that might help him generate more ground balls because he's a real fly ball pitcher. And I think that worries some people. But seeing his slider be effective against major league hitters has to help him. And he was out there pumping 96, 97 in relief on Friday night, which makes me think he's normally a guy who sits 94, 95 as a starter. He might be able to increase the velocity on that fastball in short stint relief roles, which is really cool. Mike, not everyone was Perez and Sowers-esque this week. Who was your weak performer coming into this week?
Will Smith did not get jiggy with it. Okay. Will Smith, 3 innings pitched, 4 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 Ks, and 0 walks. He tried to give away that Baltimore game that they won on Friday night. Will Smith, you friggin' kid, gives up a grand slam to Adley Rutschman to put him back into the game. And somebody on Twitter, there were multiple people on Twitter and Threads who were putting this out there. When can you ask him to pitch now? When do you feel comfortable putting Will Smith in? What leverage situation, what role does he have? And right now it's like, well, we feel comfortable putting him in when we're up by 7 or down by 7. We already have 3 guys that do that. We already have 3 guys that fill that role. We have Sauer, we have Lyles, and you might argue we have Zerpa for that too. So I don't know.
Smith went and pitched a clean inning today. So apparently it's when you're, I don't think where they were down 4 runs maybe at that time or 5. And so
that's the closer we paid money for this summer. Well, over the winter, five million bucks.
Come on.
Oh yeah, well, don't get me wrong, and that's why I feel completely fine with them immediately shelving him and pushing him to the back. But the problem there is we're now getting a large inventory of mop-up guys in our bullpen. We can't do that.
Yeah.
If you want to win games, you can't have three mop-up guys.
Yeah, it is tough because you do not trust him to pitch in any game where anything is on the line, right? Like, you just can't do it. Like, and so what's interesting is in that Friday outing, he was throwing a bit harder. He was throwing, I saw a lot of 92s on the gun at Kauffman. And so he was throwing a little bit harder. He came out today and he got some outs and stuff like that. It's tough because Will Smith is in a position where you're right. He's not walking anybody. He's just very, very hittable right now. And I don't know what the solution for that is. You can't build him a time machine. You can't like say, hey, go back and get younger and have sharper stuff. Like, it just, time is undefeated for a reason, right? Like, and so this may just be the twilight of Will Smith right here. And that sucks to say, but you know, we're going to have to find a solution because you cannot carry this guy the entire season. If you're hoping to do something, you can't carry a guy who's your fourth mop-up guy, essentially. Can't be done. For my week performer, I chose to go with a guy who all of us love and think is amazing, but had one bad outing this week, and that's Cole Reagans, right? And I wanted to, because I wanted to talk about that outing, and I wanted to talk about Reagans. Reagans went 1 2/3 innings in his sole outing this week, gave up 9 hits, 7 earned runs, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts. You saw a whole bunch of things coming out afterwards that are like, hey, sometimes people have days like this. You know, this happens occasionally. And that's 100% what this is. I don't want anyone to be like, oh, Reagans is broke too. Reagans, oh no. Like, don't do that, right? Like, a lot of those 9 hits were very weakly hit balls that just found grass. Baltimore had a really good plan against Reagans, and I don't know that Reagans had a really good way to respond, right? Here's what they did. They took his fastball to right field. They fouled off a ton of pitches on 2 strikes, and then they just blooped hits in where they could, right? Like, that was a big part of their game plan. And so they fouled off so many pitches and then just found ways to put them in play and hope for the best. And the best actually happened, right? No, on a normal day, that's not the case. On a normal day, Reagans gives up like 3 or 4 runs in this game, probably goes 5 innings, keeps the Royals in the game. Did not happen on this day. It's not even anything I'm concerned about. The only thing I'm concerned about is the Royals left him in to throw 42 pitches in one inning. That concerns me. The fact that he could be hurt by that, something like that, a guy off 2 Tommy John surgeries, that really concerns me. I hope that they monitor his pitch counts very closely for his next few outings because it scares me that he threw that many pitches in one inning.
So I'm going to say 2 things here. One, you and I saw a team do this to Cole Reagans in spring training, and I think it was the Colorado Rockies at Salt River Field. Every time he threw a fastball, all they wanted to do was put it into right field, and they beat him up pretty good. And 2, you know, in boxing, sometimes we say styles make fights. This is the kind of perfect kind of lineup to go against a Cole Reagans. If you want to divide, you know, if you want to come up with a lineup to go against Cole Reagans, one that when they get 2 strikes are going to be very difficult to put away because they're just willing to foul off, foul off, foul off, foul off, and then dink one out there to right field. This lineup is all okay with that. They're very good at it. And so, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Baltimore was the team that kind of do this to him, but he does need to come up with a counter to that. I mean, he's got to come up to it with a counter to what do I do when, you know, I'm not getting those strikeouts. They're fouling off so many of my pitches when they've got 2 strikes. I've got to have something I can do. And it'll be interesting to see that next evolution of Cole Reagans when he starts to see other teams do that to him, because they will.
Oh, they will. Every team's going to see what Baltimore did, and that will be the game plan from now on against Cole Reagans. Mike, looking back at this week, a week that the Royals went 3-3, which you can't call bad or good, really, what is your theme for the week?
Oh, I went to a great, okay? And we all know it. If you've ever seen the movie Any Given Sunday, the speech that Al Pacino gives in Any Given Sunday is legendary. It's a legendary speech, whether you're a football fan or an Al Pacino fan or whatever. What is that? I think that's an Oliver Stone movie. Is that right?
Yes. I pissed away all my money.
That's
I ran off everybody who ever loved me.
Whoever loved me. That speech right there. I went to this part. I went to the essence of it. And here it is. Here's my theme for the week. It's a little longer than what my themes usually are. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. And that is because of those, that minuscule stuff that makes you lose a White Sox game that you should have probably won, and a Baltimore game in that second game that you had a chance to come back and win, but Kyle Isbell gets thrown out at third and Salvi's glove breaks and you get all this stuff that doesn't break your way. That 2013 Royals team, they couldn't find those inches. And as they got older, they got better at it. I think this team will do the same thing. I think this team hopefully will continue to figure out those little inches. Okay, we're going to take a piece here. We're going to take a piece here. We're going to take a piece here. And that's going to add up to 5 wins in a season. But that's the difference between a wild card spot and no playoffs at all, or a wild card spot and winning the division. And so the inches. Thanks, Al Pacino. You're fucking awesome, man.
On this team, we fight for that inch.
We fight for those inches.
I love it. I love it. Go watch that monologue right now. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Go take a look at it. It's great. My theme for this week is from a great song by the great songwriter Colin Hay. And that song is, the title, I believe, is the same as my quote from it. And that is, "I'm waiting for my real life to begin." The interesting thing about the Royals this week, and I think this week especially, right, is that, like, you want to peg down what kind of team this is and what kind of team this is going to be. Like, are they going to be able to compete with the Baltimores and the Blue Jays and things like that of the world? Are they going to just be, you know, good enough to beat up on bad teams but not good enough to really do anything special? I'm waiting for that to happen. I feel like I can't begin my real life until I know what these Royals are going to be. I think we get more and more definition all the time. And I think we're learning more and more that it might settle along right in the middle. But I'm waiting to sort of see what they're going to become, waiting to see what begins. Because I think you're right, Mike. This team could eventually learn how to take those inches, in which case we're really going to slam the throttle. We're really going to get excited about what's happening. But I'm just waiting for it all to begin.
I think you're going to get a much clearer definition of what this team is when they start playing the Detroits and the Clevelands and they see the Twins again. When they really dig into the Central, I think you're going to be able to tell how much this team can compete in its own division, first off, but also maybe for a wild card as well.
Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. You already know that All In Physical Therapy helped turn our mother into Vince Warfuck, but with wheels. But what you don't know is that Mom loved her experience there because of the personal attention that she got from Tommy and the staff at All In. They guarantee a personalized one-with-one experience to suit the needs of patients recovering from total joint surgeries, sports injuries, or any kind of injury or pain.
If only All In Physical Therapy had been around when I injured my coccyx playing bumper pool.
Well, how'd you do that, Mike?
You don't want to know the... Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to.
All In Physical Therapy is owned and operated by Tommy Frevert with locations in Blue Springs and Lee Summit. But most importantly, they're in network for nearly all insurance providers.
They say being in network is next to godliness. What they don't say is that it also keeps you from financial destitution.
Yes, that's true. If you're a high school athlete recovering from injury or someone bouncing back with a brand new hip or knee, check out the best physical therapy in the KC Metro at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com, or give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We've all watched in wonder as the Royals' rotation has transformed itself from a waking nightmare last year into one of the best units in baseball so far this season. But it's actually been an organization-wide phenomenon, as many of their best pitching prospects are off to really hot starts as well. Mike, I want to talk about some pitchers specifically and then tackle the broad questions related to this pitching and pitching development. Do you have any thoughts on the origins of, I'm going to start with Ben Gaderna. Do you have any starts or thoughts on the origins of his insane start this year? Because in my mind, he's been the most impressive pitching prospect that the Royals have had so far. He has gone, what, how many innings? 14 and two-thirds innings with a 1.23 ERA, a 0.75 whip, 19 strikeouts, and only five walks. What are your thoughts on what's spurring Cadorna's hot start here?
Well, I haven't had a chance to see him throw yet, so I don't know about added pitches or changing of how he throws stuff. There's lots of talk about how good the changeup is still, which is fantastic. You know, that gets him a lot of his strikeouts. But he's increased his K rate in this time, which is big. You know, he's over 10% for a strikeout rate right now. He's avoided the home
strikeouts
run.
Do you mean strikeouts per nine?
Yeah, sorry, strikeouts per nine. I think he's at 11 point something strikeouts per nine.
Because I was going to say 10% is not an impressive strikeout rate.
His strikeout rate is much higher than that. No, his strikeouts per nine is like 11 something, I think. No, it might be more than that even. I can't remember, but it's high. He's doing very well, striking people out. His ground ball rate is also over 50%, which is very good for him. And he's not giving up home runs. And so that's a great recipe for, you know, dominating, especially where is he at? High A? Low A? Is he still?
Mm-hmm. He's in high A.
High A hitters, which is fantastic. You know, he's still young. I think he's 21 years old. Yeah, to see him take this leap forward right now, it looks like he needs to be in double A. And that would be huge. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this later, but he kind of looks like the poster child for revamped pitching development right now. High rate of strikeouts, starting to improve the ground balls, and, you know, walking as few as he can. He's still walking a little bit. You know, you still expect that from a guy who's that young. But so far, he is, I think, the poster child for revamped Royals pitching development.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I've gotten a chance to watch a few of his games or a couple of his outings, and I can tell you that it looks like an increase in sharpness on all of his stuff. Like the slider last year was not an impressive pitch for him. It's pretty good now. Like, and he's commanding it very well. So the command has actually ticked up as well. And so you're seeing just a level of sharpness from his arsenal that we did not see last year, and it's completely out of the league of most high A hitters. So I watched his last outing the other day, yesterday maybe, and all I could think was, these guys have no chance. Like the guys he was facing had no chance. It didn't matter if they were right-handed or left-handed. His changeup was too much for them. He could locate his slider for strikes in the zone early in counts. His fastball wasn't being touched, even though it was only going 93, 94. So I imagine the shape on it is pretty damn good. And so he is somebody who it looks like has taken a step up in terms of his arsenal. We were talking last year, and Alex Duvall has said this multiple times, that like he thought, well, maybe Cadorna will be like a pitch to contact guy. He looks like a back end starter, kind of, you know, workhorse kind of type. Doesn't look like he's going to strike out too many guys. Now he looks like he might strike out quite a few, or at least like his arsenal can get him up to the higher levels of the upper minors. We'll have a chance to continue to refine things. Previously, the downside risk for Cadorna was always, would he miss enough bats? Is his stuff actually good enough? It looks good enough at this point. Mike, we've talked about Bolin as like a possible depth for the starting rotation. Two other guys who are having really great years so far, Noah Cameron and Mason Barnett, look like they might be ready before too long. They're both in double A. Do you think that there's any chance that Noah Cameron or Mason Barnett get time in Major League Baseball this year?
I don't. Let me put it this way. I think it's unlikely because of guys like Jonathan Bolin and Daniel Lynch and Andrew Hoffman, and other guys in AAA, you know, and Anthony Veneziano, and possibly Jordan Lyles. Like, you're talking about them going through a list of guys that are probably ahead of them to get starts in Major League Baseball. And though I think Mason Barnett especially shows a lot more promise, and I do like Noah Cameron too, than some of those guys, I don't think they're going to rush Noah Cameron and Mason Barnett to get them to Major League Baseball unless it's an emergency. Now, that if you'll remember, my hot take before the year started was that Mason Barnett makes a start in Major League Baseball. So don't get me wrong. I would love for that to be accurate so I could rub it in your face. That would be fantastic. Okay. But I just don't see it happening. The list in the line in front of them is just too long. And with the way that the rotation looks now, it doesn't look a whole lot like ineffectiveness is going to be the reason a lot of these guys get out of there. And so, yeah, you know, and it also looks like you've got Lugo and Waka, guys who you like to think can stay relatively healthy. Singer's been pretty healthy his whole career. Alec Marsh has never had huge injury problems. So, it, you know, I just don't see a path for those guys this year, But boy, their promising start has been fantastic to see, especially for Mason Barnett, because he's got a fastball profile, I think, that's maybe a little different than just about anybody else in the organization, in that he can throw his fastball for strikes and get quite a bit of swing and miss, which is fantastic to see. You know, Alex Duvall will tell you, when he drafting of pitchers or signing of international pitchers, what's the one thing he always looks for? Can you throw your fastball in the strike zone and get swings and misses? And Mason Barnett can do that.
Yeah, he's really interesting. And one of the reasons, that's one of the big reasons he's our number two prospect, I think, or something like that. He might be our number two prospect when we did our prospect rankings before the start of the season. And a lot of people thought we had Barnett too high. And I was like, or a lot of people thought we had him higher. We shouldn't have had him higher than Chandler and stuff like that, Champlain. And I was like, no, Barnett's got something special. And he's showing that again this year, right? Like, and it's something about his fastball. It only goes about 95, but guys do not see it or do not hit it or something, because they're swinging right through it in double A right now, somehow. Add to the fact that he's got three other pitches that he can do quite a bit with. And he looks like a guy who's going to have good success. I think there's a chance that he gets to the major leagues this year, but I think it would be in a bullpen role. I think that maybe they would, maybe this is a long shot too, but maybe have him like finish the year in the bullpen for them to kind of like wind down the number of innings that he's going to go for or whatever. And say like, okay, we need help in the bullpen, 'cause we're chasing a wild card or a division. Let's get Mason Barnett up here and see if he can do us some good. Especially once the trade deadline passes, they won't really have an opportunity to go after guys. To give you a sense of how good he's been, 2.35 ERA, 0.85 whip. That's incredible.
Love it.
21 strikeouts, only 5 walks in 15 and a third innings. Noah Cameron has also been very good. 1.84 ERA, higher whip at 1.36, but 18 strikeouts and 5 walks. I watched his start the other day. Was thoroughly impressed with what Noah Cameron was doing.
How's the fastball look for him? That's my question.
Well, he added a cutter. Right. He added a cutter this offseason, and he's throwing it a bunch early in counts, and his four seam fastball is playing really well off of it. So it's four seamers up for him and cutters in under the hands of right handers. It is working so well. It is such a good combination, allows great sequencing for him, because he's got that good changeup, he's got that good curveball, and they're all coming in at different velocities. It's like 90, 91 on the cutter underhands. It's 92, 93 on the four seam. And then it's a 78 mile an hour curveball and an 81 mile an hour changeup or something like that. It's really, really good to see him throwing four distinct pitches that he can all put in the strike zone and the guys have a ton of trouble with. Mike, one more question about a specific pitcher. We saw Mazzucato having a good year this year. He hasn't thrown that much. He's only thrown 9 innings, I think. But he's given up no earned runs in that time. He's got a 0.67 whip, 12 strikeouts and 4 walks. What are your thoughts on seeing stuff like that from Mazzucato? Do you think that those numbers are any indication of what his progression is?
That doesn't tell me anything on his progression, because we already know that he can get strikeouts at that level. You know, is he at high A too?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so I feel like high A, he's going to get strikeouts like that. And that's mostly due to the big curveball that he's had since he graduated from high school. So it's not like that's progression to me. What I want to know is, can he command the fastball? Okay. You talked about how over time it's likely the velocity will gain in that. Maybe that was in our midweek episode. We were talking about it. You know, he's still not throwing the ball all that hard, his four-seam fastball, and that's going to have to go up before he gets to those higher level of the minors. But the big thing to me is, can he command that pitch? And maybe we've seen a little bit, you know, the walk rate hasn't been really high or anything like that. I think in his last outing, he went 5 and walked 1 guy, maybe had 8 strikeouts. But can he be more pitch efficient is another question that I have. You know, even if you're not walking guys, are you throwing 85 pitches in 3 innings? That's not going to work. Okay. What else can he do if the curveball isn't working that day? Does he have another pitch that he can go to put guys away or to get soft contact? So I've got still a lot of questions with Mazzucato. You know, he's not a high school kid anymore. He's not that 19-year-old kid. So I guess I would have liked to have seen a little bit more progression on the fastball than what we've seen so far, but it is early in the season.
It is. The reports of him throwing 86 to 88, though, are a little bit troubling to me. Yeah, for me, I love that he's off to a hot start. I think that, you know, that's better than the alternative, right? But I'm pretty convinced that the only thing that really matters right now is an increase in velocity and his ability to throw more strikes. That's all That's what the whole ball game rests on. I don't care that he's like striking out 15 guys per nine down in high A. I think, you know, it is what it is. When he moves to double A, that's not going to be enough. Guys are going to just lay off a lot of the pitches he's throwing out of the strike zone right now, and he's going to struggle because if you don't have velocity at all, they're not going to really struggle to hit what you're trying to get into the edge of the strike zone. If he throws a fastball in the outer third at 88 in double A, somebody's going to just park it, right? Because, you know, the outcomes for fastballs on the edges in the upper minors are a lot better than they are in the lower minors. And so, you know, he's the type of guy that velocity's got to go up. He's got to learn how to throw strikes.
And if you're looking for a little bit more on this, on what they're doing about it, Preston Farr, Royals or Farm to Fountains, put out a fantastic piece on some of the tech that they're using to help Mazzucato, the specialized mound that they're using. Was that him that put that out?
I thought that
was
him that
put that out. Yeah. And basically it's a mound that measures how you're landing, you know, and then combines it with some other stuff to say, okay, this is when you're releasing the ball, you know, how, what's the pressure like on your, the back of your foot, on the back of your lead leg and all this other stuff. And hopefully that will, it's basically designed to make your delivery more efficient, right?
Mm-hmm.
More efficient means better command and higher velocities. And so hopefully that works out. It's the big thing that Preston put in there is it's what Paul Skeens used at LSU, and he throws harder than shit. So hopefully Mazzucato can get some benefit from those things and get some of the inefficiencies out of his delivery so that the command gets better at the very least, and hopefully the velocity as well.
Yeah. Looking at this group as a whole, and I want to talk about some other guys too, because I made this whole list of guys who are off to hot starts here. We've talked about a few of them. Blake Walters has been okay as well. He hasn't been really off a hot start, but he's been pretty good. Jonathan Bolin has, of course, been very good. He's got a 2.57 ERA, a 1.1 whip. This is at AAA, mind you, with 21 strikeouts and 5 walks in 21 innings. So he's been very good. Steven Zoback, my boy, he's got a 1.20 ERA. Check this out, a 0.67 whip. For Steven Zoback so far this year. 13 strikeouts and only 3 walks in 15 innings. He's a guy who looks like he's going to have that profile of, yeah, I won't have a ton of strikeouts, but I'm also going to walk no one, right? And Mike, I know you love that profile.
I do.
What are your thoughts on what this performance among a lot of minor league pitchers says about the team's pitching development and where it's at compared to where it used to be?
It's a plan, and it looks like a real plan to me, and that's fantastic, because I went through and I looked at a lot of those different guys, and there was some glaring things that were like, well, yeah, you can see they've been working on that stuff. And it was this: almost every one of those guys has increased their strikeout rate, their ground ball rate, or both. Okay. And so that's, if that's the formula, if that's the archetype, if that's the, hey, this is what we're going to be working on, this is what Royals pitching is going to be, this is my golf clap to you, JJ Piccolo, Brian Sweeney, Paul Gibson, who I was very critical of early on.
Mitch Stetter.
Yes. Very good. To all those guys.
Justin Friedman. Yeah, we'll throw out all the
Justin
names.
Friedman. Yeah. I'll give credit to all those people, because for years we asked for a plan. You know, we asked for a plan in Royals pitching development and never got one. We never got, outside of the, we're going to get them to establish a fastball in low A and high A and double A. Like, no, what are we doing? What does a Royals pitcher look like? And now it seems like we have an idea of what that is.
Yeah, it's amazing to see. It's amazing to see what kind of success a whole bunch of guys can have. It's amazing to see how quickly and how definitively a system's pitching can be turned around in a short period of time when it's given a direction, when it's given a modern way of thinking about pitching development, which is like, work on arsenals, make pitches better, like help these guys learn these, or help them learn, like teach them how to actually be better at this.
Give them a plan before the winter starts.
Yes. Give them information that they can use to make their pitches better, right? Like that they can use to make themselves better as pitchers. Like these are all huge things. Give them an individualized plan. Like we've heard the pitching prospects talk about this in interview after interview of what they're actually getting now compared to what they were getting previously. And it is night and day. And it's done in such a thorough way now that I think you're seeing the emergence of a pitching factory of sorts built on a solid philosophy and approach. So is it all the way there yet? Of course not. We still need to see these guys transition to Major League Baseball. And we've saw some of them. Alec Marsh is a good example of somebody who looks like he's found what will be his footing in the major leagues. And Jonathan Bolin looks like he's on deck next. And, you know, some of these guys are looking like they're almost ready. But you look at this slate of guys who's gotten off to a really good start this year, and you start to say, wait, are the Royals now what Cleveland was, in the, with the ability to sort of turn out a bunch of guys who have a really good chance of contributing at the major league level as pitchers? Because if they do, that is huge for them as a team.
And the really exciting thing is they haven't really scouted and drafted with this in mind yet. Not that much anyway. They haven't gone to Latin America to find guys that are going to fit what they're looking for yet. They haven't drafted for what they're going to look for yet, for this type of pitcher and this type of development yet. Think about how good it could be when they start doing that. So when that draft comes this summer, I'm going to be extremely interested to see the type of pitching that they take, because I think you're going to see either one, it's somebody who already fits into this mold, or two, it's somebody that they think, hey, they have this. Imagine what they're going to be when we add this to them, when we add their ability, we add this pitch, which is going to get them to get ground balls, or we add this pitch, which is going to help them strike out more hitters, whatever. That connection between the scouting side and the scouting drafting side and the international signing with that pitching development could be huge. It could pay huge dividends.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Royals finish off their homestand with four games against the Toronto Blue Jays before hitting the road for Detroit to end the week. Mike, we'll play Toronto in seven of our next 10 games, so we need to get very familiar with this Toronto team.
Get Canadian, help us, y'all.
Help us out, and let us know what this team's all about.
I'm going to drink 12 Molsons and eat some French fries and gravy right now. Okay? Or wait, Molson's, I don't know what they drink up there anymore. Is it Molson still? Labatt Blue used to be a thing. I don't know.
I have no, I don't drink alcohol.
Real Canadians are out there just lambasting me right now because we don't actually drink Molson's, you idiot.
Just hams.
Sorry, Canada. The Toronto Blue Jays are 12-10, which is good for fourth in the AL East. It's a good division. the first game will give us Brady Singer versus Yusei Kikuchi, a 32-year-old left-hander out of Japan, 2.08 ERA and a 1.15 whip. So he started the year nicely. He's got a four-seam fastball in the mid-90s, a curveball, a slider, a changeup. He throws the fastball about 50% of the time. And generally speaking, his outings go as his fastball goes. So if his fastball is good that day, he has a good outing. If it dips in velocity that day, he can get hit around a little bit. In that second game, it'll be Michael Wacha versus Kevin Gausman, 33-year-old righty out of LSU. Boy, 8.16 ERA for Gausman right now, 1.74 whip, not having a Kevin Gausman-like season. Four-seam fastball, averaging 94. The splitter and the slider, he's known for the splitter, but guys are really hitting his four-seam fastball right now, which he throws about half the time. Has it dipped a little in velocity? I remember him throwing harder than that.
Yeah, it has, and there, you know, people are wondering, like, is it going to come back? And if it does, he'll probably be better. In fact, I saw a start he had fairly recently. I saw some numbers on it. It looked like he was getting some of that velocity back. So we'll see if he has it when he faces the Royals.
Okay. In that third game, it's going to be Alec Marsh versus Yariel Rodriguez, a 27-year-old right-handed pitcher out of Cuba, 2.35 ERA and a 1.3 whip. He's got a four-seam fastball averaging at 95, slider, split finger, curveball. He's got an expected ERA that's over 6, so he's probably been lucky so far. He gets hit very hard at times, but he also can get a lot of strikeouts. That gives me a real Carlos Hernandez vibe when he used to start, by the way. So I could see that being – maybe keep that kind of in the back of your mind. In that last game, Cole Reagans will try and get back to being Cole Reagans versus Jose Berrios, 29-year-old right-handed pitcher out of – Papa Juan the 23rd High School in Puerto Rico.
I was wondering if you would stumble over those Roman numerals.
I did it. I went through it a couple times earlier when I was reading this. I was like, Papa Juan. I love Papa Juan's. Big Puerto Rico fan here. Is that Pope John the 23rd? Is that what that means?
Like, I don't know.
Okay. anyway, he's got a Jose Berrios, the old twin. He was with the Twins for a long time. 0.85 ERA, 1.01 WHIP. He's had a good, nice start to the year. He's a little different than what he started out with Minnesota. He's a sinker, 93-94, slurve, four-seam fastball changeup. He throws the sinker and the slurve about 75% of the time and generates a lot of ground balls. He's kind of a ground ball guy. He used to be more of a power strikeout guy. That'll be an important series. Really need to get at least two, I'd say, out of that series. Maybe, let's say, three would be even better. But, you know, I don't want to be greedy or anything.
Three would be dope. I would take three. But two is fine if they want to just get two. After that, they head to Detroit to face the Tigers for the first time this year. The Tigers were one of those teams that a lot of people thought might be dark horse candidates in the AL Central as well. They've done pretty well so far. They're at least hanging around. They're not in White Sox territory or anything. The Tigers are 12-10, which is good enough for third in the AL Central. They're struggling offensively. He's having trouble scoring runs. They're 25th in weighted runs created plus as a team. Riley Green is hitting. Mark Canha is hitting. And Kerry Carpenter is hitting. But other than that, everyone else is not hitting. And so guys like that they were really counting on, like Spencer Torkelson has something like an 84, 85 weighted runs created plus right now as a first baseman. That's not great. They have a whole lineup full of guys who just really aren't hitting that much except for just a couple. Their staff is pretty good. Their pitching staff, their rotation especially, it's good, not great, I would say. Tariq Skubal is great. He's been really good this year.
Love that
Reese Olson is having a pretty good year right now so far. We've seen him a couple times in years past. Jack Flaherty, their free agent sign, and Casey Mize, their former first overall pick, they've both just been around league average. So something like 4.2 to 4.4 or something like that in ERA right now. Real average from both of them. Kenta Maeda has been a train wreck for them. He has been awful. And so hopefully we run into him. but we'll see when we head to Detroit.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We'll finish this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just About Outside segment. I had a lot of choices this week. I had a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. I had to narrow it down to one, and I'm a little disappointed about that. But Mike, you get to go first. Tell us what's been interesting in your life for the last week.
Well, I started watching a new show, and I haven't done that in a long time, but and at least liked it enough to continue watching it. And so I started a show called Colin from Accounts. It's on, I'm watching it on Paramount Plus, actually. Our mother has Paramount Plus, so I steal her login info for that. But it's an Australian show. It's a comedy, but when you watch it, you absolutely, and this is weird because I'm all about comedy, sitcoms. I don't want to watch drama. I don't want to watch relationships unfold, none of that crap. But I was like so into the relationship that was going on in this comedy. I was like, I want you guys to make it, you know? And it's basically about
Mike's this a guy. Romantic.
It's basically about this guy who, and this girl who meet when she flashes him on the street, walking across the street. And he, as a result, he hits a dog with his car and they both feel so bad about it that they basically become like parents of this dog, but they're very different people. You know, he is much older than her. They live different lifestyles and kind of the workings in and outs of this. And the first season is essentially them falling in love, which that's not my kind of thing, you know,
but Mike loves
my wife and I were, my wife and I were watching it and I'm like finding myself rooting for these two to get together and like laughing. And it's just a very interesting story and an interesting style of comedy. So, even though it seems like the storyline is one, like, oh, okay, sitcom storyline that checks the box there. The way that they do it is very different. And I like that a lot. It was really good. And it turns out the two people who are like the main stars are actually married in real life as well. And yeah, it's just really, good, interesting sitcom television. So it's only 8 episodes for the first season. It's been renewed for the second for a second season. But Colin from Accounts, check it out.
That is cool. That does sound cool. I love an Australian TV show, and I don't know if I've told you about this show that's on Netflix called Fisk. It's like an Australian comedy. It is so hilarious.
Is that the one where the guy's funny. A lawyer?
Well, it stars a woman. She's a lawyer.
Okay, then I'm thinking of a different one.
Oh, you're thinking of Rake, which is another Australian show where he's a lawyer. Yes. But yeah. Fisk is another Australian TV show where she's a lawyer. A lot of lawyer shows in Australia, apparently. But she's a probate lawyer, and it's just a hilarious, hilarious show. If you ever get a chance, Mike, and you want to watch it, it's called Fisk. It's on Netflix. It's really good. But anyway, I'm going to check out Colin from Accounts, too, because I love love. I love a love story. I'll take it. You know, like... I'm talking about something else that is good, but we always talk about it like it's bad, right? Monday of last week was tax day. And interestingly, on that day, I saw a tweet from Mark Cuban where he talked about how much he had to pay in taxes this year and why he was happy to pay it. And I started thinking to myself, like, hey, here's what we should do. We should start changing the image on taxes because nothing annoys me more. So my gist about outside this week is taxes are good. Okay. Nothing annoys me more than a person who complains about taxes without any understanding of how taxes work, what taxes are, anything about taxes. They're just generally embedded with the notion that, like, oh, government taxes me too much. Taxes are bad. And it's like, okay, shut up, because I just heard you complaining about potholes like a second ago, right? Like the people who like sort of have no internal logic of like, I want the government to spend all this money on stuff that I want, but I also don't want to pay taxes. It's like, what are you talking about? Where is your brain? Like, in your ass? Like, it doesn't make any sense. How are we going to spend money on stuff if we don't have any taxes? It doesn't make any sense, right? Like, and so I want to sort of think about taxes in a different way. Why don't we just say, hey, no, wait, taxes are good, right? Like, taxes pay for a bunch of stuff that all of us utilize, like roads, parks, schools, so many other things, right? Like, they are an essential to running a country, a society, right? Like, now, you might say...
It's like the oldest thing in history. We've been doing taxes forever.
Every place pays them. Every place has them. Every place pays them. Every place uses that money to make life better for everyone, okay? And you might say, oh, well, they mismanaged the money, though. They spend $400 on a toilet. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like, I'm sure the government spends some money wastefully, but you also have to remember that they're not in charge of just giving you what you want. Okay. Like, they got to think about what everybody needs and what everybody wants, right? Like, and so it's not just about you. Taxes are a good thing because they represent the ways in which we live collectively, which we have to do in order to have the best version of our lives. And so, yes, I went to public school. Taxes paid for that. I, you know, drive on roads every day. Taxes pay for those. I'm using the internet right now. Guess what? The internet was developed by DARPA, right? Which is a government-funded program, right? Like, so all these things that you have and are utilizing that are in some way supported by taxes, you probably don't even realize, right? Like, just be grateful. And yes, the American tax system is stupid because it forces people to, like, guess what their taxes are, basically. And then, like, you know, you get in trouble if you didn't guess right. But and that's really stupid. But the general base sense of, like, paying taxes, it's a good thing. Give yourself a pat on the back if you paid your taxes. Probably went to a good cause.
I once heard I won't say his name because people are going to might have some very strong feelings about him, but a very famous intellectual make this argument. Like, if we actually understood taxes, we would probably celebrate the paying of our taxes. But he's like, you know, the advertising is much better off for the other side. And he's like, you know, it's just like a car commercial. If you think about a car commercial, like they don't ever, like the last thing they put on the screen is the price. Instead, everything before that is crap you will never actually do with a car. Taxes are kind of the opposite of that. Nobody really understands well what they do and how much they benefit from them. All they see is the upfront money. It's like the money comes first. I don't ever know or see all the ways I benefit from it. And so, yeah, that's this other intellectual was talking about that. I thought it was kind of funny.
And a lot of people are, it's just like it's almost a part of their ideology. It's not even like, you know, it's like I grew up hearing my dad talk about how awful the taxes are and how bad the government is with money, all this sort of stuff. And so that's what I believe. And it's like, have you ever just thought about all the stuff that you get as a result of taxes? Right? Like, it's insane.
Well, it is. It is part of our identity as a country as well.
Right, it is.
The founding of our country was so wrapped up in the idea of anti-taxation.
I understand that. But we have moved far enough away from that now to use our reasonable, logical brains and reconsider the notion of taxes and be okay with them. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Taxes are okay. You know what else is okay? Winning baseball. So let's hope the Royals do a lot of it this week. We will be back next week to talk to you regardless of if they win or lose. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.